Hello and welcome back to the Classics Podcast, and to this episode of Revision. In this mini bite-sized episode, you'll hear our host James Renshaw talking to two academics, Professor Lynette Mitchell of Exeter University and Dr. Roel Conandike of the University of Oxford. They'll be discussing interpretation question one, why did the Greeks win the Persian Wars? In this part, they discuss whether Persian military tactics or Greek leadership played a greater role in the overall Greek victory.
So I think it's really important to remember for our students that there is that difference where the Greeks are fighting to defend their homes and there is an invading force. And we do get that sense in Herodotus of really trying to defend your homeland. So let's have a think, Roel, let's have a think about Persian military tactics. Okay, the idea that we do get in Herodotus that they don't really fight effectively. And there's a couple of possible reasons here. One is that the Greeks managed to neutralize the threat of their cavalry. They managed to fight in the advantageous places. So Thermopylae is a narrow pass, although it's a Greek defeat. Plataea, they managed to effectively get to fight when and where they want to. And then something else that Herodotus tells us at Plataea, he says specifically, actually, the Persians fought just as bravely as the Greeks, but their armor wasn't as good. And so when it got to close combat, rather than firing bows and arrows, they really struggled. So, Roel, this is your expertise, this area. So talk us through this. Can we take this as a reason?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, the first point on the cavalry is certainly relevant because according to Herodotus himself, the Persians really did try to find battleground where their cavalry would be effective. So they tried to find these long open plains where they would be able to maneuver and decide battles with their cavalry, as they had done during the Ionian Revolt and had been very effective. And the Greeks were obviously very aware of that and were trying to prevent that from happening. So we're told that they specifically chose to fight at Thermopylae and later in the hills at Plataea rather than in the plain, because they were afraid that otherwise they'd be overrun by Persian cavalry. So in those cases, they very deliberately tried to counter the Persian advantage. At Marathon, they managed to overcome this by somehow fighting the battle in a way that left the cavalry unable to influence the events. And it's been, you know, a question that historians have fought over for 2,500 years, how they managed to achieve that, because there is no hint of it really in the ancient sources, how the cavalry managed to, or how the cavalry was somehow not involved in that battle at Marathon. But later on, they very deliberately tried to make sure that they would not have to fight cavalry in the open. And this remains a constant thing throughout Greek history. I mean, they're terrified of cavalry. Cavalry is very easily able to roll up these heavy infantry forces. And so they always have to try and fight in places where those cavalry cannot operate. And they get lucky because at Plataea or at Thermopylae, the Persians don't have a choice. It's only one way through. So they have to confront the Greeks in their chosen ground. And at Plataea, they actually are lucky in the sense that the enemy commander, who is at that point Mardonius, not Xerxes, is kind of fed up with the whole thing, wants to have his one decisive blow, and so attacks them on their chosen ground rather than fighting them in the open where he would have the advantage. So the cavalry side is definitely something that where the Greeks are making very deliberate tactical decisions. Now, as for the fighting thing, the infantry fighting aspect, this is something that Herodotus brings up several times. He says that Greek infantry is just more effective in a fight than the Persians. And particularly, he says, it's not because the Persians are weaker or cowards. They fight very bravely, but they just have very bad equipment. The problem is that statement contradicts his own statements about Persian equipment. He describes Persian armor. He describes their weaponry and shields. He describes them as heavy infantry, which are easily as well equipped as the Greeks themselves. He also describes the many other peoples fighting in their army who have equipment that he says is basically like the Greeks. I mean, when you have troops that you're levying from Greek states in Asia Minor, but also from Lydians and Carians, Phoenicians and Cypriots, Egyptians, Assyrians, Medes, they all fight as heavy infantry. So there are many people who could stand up to Greeks in hand-to-hand combat. So there's no reason to believe that he's being truthful when he says that they had a disadvantage because they didn't wear armor. We know they wore armor. We have images, we have descriptions, we have archaeological remains of fish scale cuirasses that the Persians wore. We know they wore helmets. We know their cavalry was heavily armored. So what's going on here? There have been a few different suggestions. One is that it's actually just a reference to the fact they didn't have these big round Greek shields, these hoplite shields, which are very protective in close combat. Persians didn't have those. They may have carried smaller shields or no shields at all because they were also serving as archers. So maybe that versatility is a disadvantage when the Greeks are already in your face. But another argument that's been made is that possibly by this point in the campaign, at the Battle of Plataea, these same troops had been in the field for 2 years. Their equipment was deteriorating. Fewer and fewer of them would have had an intact piece of body armor on them. So this was kind of slowly going away, or either being discarded because of the demands of the campaign and because of the weather, or it was simply wearing out. And so when the Greeks confronted them, many of them may have already lost the armor they initially had. And so the fight was a lot easier for the Greeks because this army was starting to show wear and tear, essentially. So there are different reasons to try and explain this, but we do have to explain it because it doesn't work within Herodotus' own narrative. He's contradicting himself when he says this.
I get that at Plataea, but if we bring that back to Thermopylae, though, and again, if we believe Herodotus' account, essentially we get a small number of Greek troops just slaughtering thousands upon thousands of Persians. And there is a sense there that it's only by encircling the small number of Greeks at Thermopylae that they managed to win. So how would you explain the Greek success at Thermopylae for those 2.5 days?
That's an interesting way to frame it as a success, yes, for 2.5 days. But this is the thing about Thermopylae. I mean, it is one of the great geographical bottlenecks of the Greek peninsula. And so any invader who wants to enter mainland Greece, that's where you stop them. And this continues to be true afterwards. I mean, there are several further battles of Thermopylae in antiquity and even into modern times. I mean, this is just where you can easily stop an enemy army. And the terrain is so heavily in the favor of the defender that, you know, it's really hard to lose until the enemy figures out that the pass can be turned, as the Persians did, and as every other attacker who went through that area also eventually discovered. So it's not really a testament to Greek superiority in infantry combat that they held the pass at Thermopylae. I mean, that's expected. And in fact, I mean, the defender usually holds that place until, you know, you hold that place until you are surrounded and then you have to withdraw. But in that situation, actually, and this is interesting with regard to what I said about deteriorating equipment, Herodotus there actually only says that the problem of the Persians was that their spears were a little bit shorter. He doesn't mention that they wear no armor or have no shields or anything like that. So we're not talking about this kind of problem with body armor or anything like that. He's just talking about some marginal difference, which obviously works to their disadvantage because they have no room to maneuver, because they can't get around and they have to advance directly into the Greek spears. But even then, whether that's actually been so effective, I mean, Herodotus says that they, you know, kept pushing back the Persians and that they held this against all attempts to drive them out of the position. But at the end, he tells a very suspect story of how many losses the Persians actually suffered. And it seems quite likely that Persian losses were not that high because they mostly weren't actually engaged in continuous hand-to-hand fighting for that pass, but kind of held off and tried to bombard the Greeks with arrows until their encircling force could strike them from the rear. And so we have to kind of re-visualize this battle not as continuous melee in which the Greeks have this consistent advantage, but rather, as Herodotus says, there was a wall across the pass. The Greeks were defending this wall. So this is not an open battle, but a siege battle in a sense. And the Persians were at liberty to hold off and not attack that very strongly because they were already maneuvering around that position and time was in their favor. You know, the longer they could wait and hold and keep the Greeks busy, the greater the chance that that position would eventually be turned. So this is something where Herodotus is glorifying the Spartan achievement and making them seem like these indomitable warriors. But actually, when you look at the details of the story, it's really not that simple.
I love it. Good bit of revisionist of Herodotus and challenging ancient historians. This is really interesting. Thank you. So I think that idea of the weaponry and armor having deteriorated by Plataea is a very interesting one and something perhaps for our students to hold on to. Well, Lynette, let's come to another possible reason. And if we read Herodotus, it seems that he thinks that the Greeks also had better leadership. So we have the foresight of Themistocles in advising the evacuation from Athens, for example, and sending the message across to Xerxes to make him attack in the Bay of Salamis. We have the example of Leonidas at Thermopylae. We have the sort of calm overall hand of Eurybiades. We have Pausanias achieving so much at Plataea. And then on the other side, we have Xerxes. We have Xerxes as a sort of megalomaniac with anger management issues. Mardonius gets sacked after 492 and then gets brought back again. Are we able to even work out what the quality of leadership was like, or are we just guessing?
Well, I think to say that Mardonius was sacked, I mean, he's part of the royal family, so he can't really be sacked. And he was a very important personage in the Achaean court. I think one of the things that is significant in terms of the leadership, and it's quite interesting, is the fact that the Persian kings didn't tend to lead from the front. There was a very different style of kingship, which meant that they were apart. They were always apart. It changes later on in the 4th century when the Persians come up against Alexander. To a certain extent, that changes. But it was sort of fairly typical for the Persian king to sit on the hill. I mean, I think that's how it's described at Salamis, and watch what's going on so that he's able to reward. He's got his list, what's called the day book, where he's able to take account of who's doing well and who's doing not so well so that he can reward them later on, because that's his role. It's not his role to be in the thick of it, whereas in the Greek world, it's a very different sort of thing, where actually being a king, being a ruler, meant leading from the front and, you know, displaying your charismatic quality by being in the middle of battle and being seen to be in the middle of battle. And that's the sort of the role that Leonidas plays, that, you know, the Spartan king, with your shield or on your shield. And so very much part of Spartan ideology was that the glory of dying in battle was worth something. You know, it was worth dying for. So it's not so much that it's better leadership, it's a very different kind of leadership that we see, and people playing very different kinds of roles. And the role that Themistocles plays, for example, is a very interesting one, because he seems to deliberately propagate a kind of Odyssean sort of character about him, sort of the trickiness in sort of that lack of straightforwardness and playing behind the scenes. He's willing to play behind the scenes in order to get the kind of thing that he, or get the outcome that he wants, or get people to do what he wants. So I think it's a different kind of thing rather than necessarily good or bad leadership. It's just a different kind of leadership, and decisions are being made in different kinds of ways. So in a Persian context, the king would make the decision with his court around him, but he ultimately makes the decision. Whereas in a Greek context, it's much more about debate and different people having different views, which means that you get different sorts of outcomes. And it's why Themistocles can sort of play the game in the way that he does at various points to get the kind of result that he wants to get. And I think it's quite interesting and quite important to remember that Themistocles ends up in the end in Persia.
And I was just gonna say that the great irony is that it's not just Themistocles, because Pausanias goes kind of native when he's over in Persian territory as well. And so you have really the two great war heroes from the Greek side, the two great leaders, Themistocles at Salamis and Pausanias at Plataea. And they both end up working for the Persians. So what does that tell us?
I think that there was something quite attractive to the Greeks, or to some Greeks, about this Persian leadership style, where there was power. You know, they just want power. It's coming back to this competitive, you know, this question of competitiveness, and where Themistocles loses out in one way, so he gains in another way. And Pausanias is the same. You know, Pausanias gets accused of holding Persian parties and all sorts of things, which has sort of got to be a bit of nonsense, really. But the Greeks were always fascinated. I mean, that's partly what Herodotus is writing about and talking about, is the Greek fascination with Persian leadership styles. And, you know, that they find it endlessly interesting. they want to say, well, we're not really like that. We're quite different from that. We're not secluded, and we're not, you know, we don't hide away. We put our leaders out on display. So we've got a different way of going about things, but they're still very interested in it and very interested in exploring it in very different kinds of ways, you know, what and how Persian leadership might sort of become adaptable to a Greek context, which is, in the end, that's what Alexander the Great becomes interested in. You know, how can he become a Persian king? And it's just this sort of same kind of thing being played out. Xenophon in the 4th century talks about how actually, you know, we've got to be really careful going to Persia because we might like it too much and we may forget to come home. So there is this sort of play with Persia as a sort of society which on the one hand represents all these values that they don't like, but on the other hand has some attributes which the Greeks find also deeply appealing, even if very problematic.
Okay, fascinating. Thank you. Well, that's the issue around leadership, and it sounds like it's hard to tell really whether the Greeks have better leadership. Make sure you follow the Classics podcast on Spotify so that you'll be the first to hear about each new episode. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and make sure you follow us on Instagram at The Classical Pod. For bonus materials, check out our website, classicalassociation.org/podcast.